Hi, everyone. This is Sam Black with Drafting Archetypes, and today I'm going to be discussing Grixis in Outlaws of Thunder Junction. As always, the notes are available to follow along at patreon.com/draftingarchetypes. The reason I chose to talk about Grixis today is in my early drafts, I found myself drafting it a lot, and it's gone pretty well for me, which is noteworthy because per the initial larger 17 lands data, green has been very successful, and two overdrafted underperforming archetypes are red, blue, and I believe blue-black. Two of Grixis. So since they've been working pretty well for me, I thought that it's possible that people have been doing something wrong with them. It's very hard for me to know what exactly other people have been doing and what has and hasn't been working for them, but I figured I could talk about why I think I've found success with these colors and what I'm looking for and what I see in them. So specifically, I want to focus on how the mechanics within the color pairs in Grixis overlap and lead to a coherent strategy. So the coherent strategy is basically burning your opponent out. You have a lot of different triggers and conditions that lead to your opponent losing life and or you gaining life or dealing damage to your opponent. And so it lends itself very well to a passive or at least non-attacking heavy style of gameplay that lends itself really well to my natural inclinations. I like using creatures defensively and just kind of getting value out of my spells and not worrying about risking my own life total or board position to try to find profitable attacks. So Grixis can win without needing to engage in combat a lot, and that's satisfying to me. So first, the key uncommons from each of these colors. In blue, my preferred uncommons for this kind of strategy are Nimble Brigand, the 2 and a blue 1/3 that draws a card when it damages your opponent and is unblockable if you've committed a crime this turn. Metamorphic Blast, the spree card that can be, it's blue and then +1 to make a creature an 0/1 until end of turn and +3 to draw two cards and it's an instant. This is a very good way to commit crimes, to profitably engage in combat with your understated creatures, and to continue card flow for your double spell triggers. And Slickshot Lockpicker, which is 2 and a blue for a 2/3 that gives a spell in your graveyard flashback until end of turn when it enters, and you can plot it for 2 and a blue. This is basically just lets you reuse your spells, so it's good in any kind of spell deck. And of course, anytime you play it and then play any spell that it targets, that's two spells, so you trigger your two spell things. In black, Blood Hustler is 1 and a black for a 1/1 that gets a +1/+1 counter the first time each turn that you commit a crime, and you can spend 3 and a black to drain your opponent for one. They lose life and you gain a life, which is, and it's target opponent, so it commits a crime, so it triggers itself and also your other crime things. And then, of course, it also just passively grows with all of your other crime things. Rakish Crew, 2 and a black enchantment, ETB make a mercenary, and then whenever an outlaw you control dies, drain your opponent for one. That doesn't target, so it doesn't trigger crime things. And then Unfortunate Accident, that's the black spree, black plus 2 and a black to destroy target creature and plus colorless to make a mercenary. And then kind of an honorable mention-ish to Unscrupulous Contractor. That's 2 and a black for a 3/2 ETB. You can sack a creature. If you do, target player loses 2 life and draws 2 cards. And then you can plot that for 2 and a black. This card has been underwhelming in decks that don't support it really well. But if you're very good at making mercenaries, then it's a fantastic piece of this puzzle and way to convert your mercenaries into continuing to cast two spells a turn. So, for example, it plays very well with a card that I'm about to talk about, Brimstone Roundup, one of the my favorite red uncommons, which is one in a red for an enchantment. Whenever you cast your second spell each turn, make a mercenary, and it plots for two in a red. The other red uncommon that I like a lot is Longhorn Sharpshooter, which is two in a red for a 3/3 reach, and then you can plot it for three in a red, and when you plot it, you do two damage to any target. And then, most importantly, the multicolor uncommons. All of the multicolor uncommons in these cards, in these colors, are good, but Intimidation Campaign has been great for me. It has unimpressive stats. This is the blue-black one enchantment that when it enters the battlefield, you drain your opponent for one and draw a card, and whenever you play a crime, you can return it to your hand. And then At Knife Point is the red-black one uncommon that gives all of your outlaws first strike on your turn, and whenever you commit your first crime each turn, you make it a mercenary. And then, I think somewhat less essentially, Vial Smasher, the black-red 3/2 mercenary that whenever a mercenary enters, you deal one damage to target opponent, which commits a crime, which triggers all of your crime stuff. Chrom, the 4-mana 2/3 that whenever you cast your second spell, you put a +1/+1 counter on Chrom and draw a card. And then Slick Sequence, blue-red, 2 damage to any target. If you've played another spell this turn, draw a card. But all the gold uncommons are really good. And critically, there's a lot of like cross-synergy between them, where a lot of the cards that trigger from one mechanic trigger another mechanic. So like Intimidation Campaign triggers for committing a crime, but it makes it extremely easy to play two spells every turn, and really two spells every turn for almost the entire game, as you can keep replaying Intimidation Campaign and playing something that commits a crime and picking up Intimidation Campaign and drawing more cards and continuing to do that. And Brimstone Roundup makes a mercenary when you cast your second thing. That by itself doesn't trigger a crime, but if you have Vial Smasher, then it does. So it's not necessarily exactly that all of the things directly trigger each other, but all of the three parts, mercenaries, two spells, and committing crimes, have like positive feedback loops with each other, where the output for one of the things is the input for another thing, and so it just ends up synergizing very well. So looking at the key commons for each color, Take the Fall, the blue 1-mana cantrip that gives a creature -1/-0 and draws a card and gives -4/-0 if you control an outlaw. I think this is the best blue common and possibly the best common overall for Grixis decks, because it's a 1-mana spell that triggers a crime and draws a card, so it's great for both your crime synergies and your two spell synergies. And also, it's a very effective combat trick. I found it extremely easy to get like card advantage on the battlefield by just like blocking large creatures with a bunch of mercenaries and then removing that creature's power, and then the creature dies for free and I get all the other stuff that Take the Fall is giving me. I really just want like large numbers of Take the Falls in all of my blue decks. A distant second in this archetype for me is Loan Shark. That's the 4-mana 3/4 that you can plot for 4 mana, and if you played another spell this turn, you draw a card when you cast it, or when it enters the battlefield, rather. And then Consuming Ashes, the 4-mana removal spell that's exile, like 2BB, exile target creature if it costs 3 or less, surveil 2, is just a good removal spell. This archetype is really looking for good removal spells because your opponent's creatures are going to be better than yours. Other colors just generally have creatures at a better rate than these creatures, certainly like more body per casting cost. But you're kind of accumulating value whenever you do things for like casting spells and targeting stuff. And so the more you can trade one for one with your opponent, the more incidental value you're going to get. And like, I find that for the most part, the game going longer favors me. So I like having all of the efficient removal that I can in this archetype. So similarly, another black common that I value highly is Desert's Dew. One and a black target creature gets -2/-2 plus an additional -1/-1 for each desert you control. Notably, I want to have a lot of deserts in this deck because they're additional crime triggers. And also I'm playing a three color deck, so I want the fixing, but I'm going to prioritize even deserts that are only half in my colors, just for those extra crime triggers and the free damage. And then Raven of Fell Omens, one and a black for a 1/2 flyer. Whenever you commit a crime, drain your opponent for one. I know that this card has unimpressive initial stats. I think it's very good in these decks that prioritize cards like Take the Fall and Iron Fist Pulverizer, which we'll get to, but things that let you cheaply and or repeatedly trigger crimes such that you're triggering your Raven most turns. I would say I'm looking to trigger it close to an average of once a turn, where sometimes I'll trigger it both on my turn and my opponent's turn. When you're triggering it at least once a turn, it's a very efficient creature. But if you're triggering it only occasionally, then it's not very efficient. And then Desperate Bloodseeker. This is a very good creature. 2/2 lifelink, ETB, target player mills 2. It plays really well with removal because you can kill your opponent's blockers and attack and gain life, and it gives you a nice life cushion in a format where gaining life is really important. And then also it can be a crime trigger if you mill your opponent when you play it. And then in red, Highway Robbery, that's the tormenting voice with plot, but it's quite a bit better than that because you can sack a land or discard a card, and then you draw two, and you can pay for it and play it later. So it's great for casting two spells. You can spend your mana when you don't know what resource you're going to want to get rid of and figure it out later. Really just fantastic. I actually think that that's the best red common, at least in this kind of space. Partially because I think that the uncommons and rares are so much better than the commons, that having a common that just digs you to your good cards is much better than having like another kind of medium card. And then I'm also very into Iron Fist Pulverizer, the 4 and a red, 4/5 reach that when you cast your second spell, deals 2 damage to your opponent and scries 1. Notably, it's to target opponent, so it commits a crime, so it triggers your other stuff. This puts a really fast clock on your opponent, blocks really, really well, and is also giving you some amount of card selection. Really just like a perfect top end for this deck. I don't take it very highly because I don't want a lot of them and they don't go super early, but I really want to have one or two of them and three in some decks that play to it really well. If I have like a lot of other plot, then I'm more interested in playing more of them. And then Explosive Derailment is just a solid red removal spell. That's the common spree card that's red base and then +2 to deal 4 damage to a creature and +2 to destroy an artifact. And then the last noteworthy commons are all of the deserts that tap for any of your colors. I think if a desert that's half on, you want to take over most commons. A desert that taps for 2 of your colors, I think you want to take over most cards. Anything that's not like really essential. Mana fixing deserts are really incredible. Yeah, so those are the cards that I'm looking at. And again, like, I'm really just looking to maximize crime and two spell and stuff synergies. Notably, I think that your deck will, between like caring about mercenary tokens, caring about casting two spells, and caring about committing crimes, I think that your deck is often only going to do 2 of those things. Sometimes it'll only do 1, but in that spot, I think you're usually going to be 2 colors splashing the third color, where the 2 colors are the 2 that center on the thing that you're doing. So like if it's 2 spells, then you'll be blue red with maybe a small black splash for additional removal. Or if you're crimes, then you'll be blue black with a small red splash for additional removal. If you're mercenaries, you'll be red black with a blue splash for something, maybe good uncommons or whatever. But if you're solid Grixis, you're often going to care about all three of these things, but and it's not difficult. Like, it's not hard to find room to care about all of these, again, because they feed each other. So, yeah, and then while they're feeding each other, so many of them result in just, like, your opponent losing life. You have the Deserts, the Pulverizer, the Raven, Intimidation Campaign, the activated ability of Blood Hustler, your creatures dying with Rakish Crew, the trigger from Vial Smasher. You can burn your opponent with Slick Sequence. And then you can also find profitable attacks. You can tap mercenaries to give extra power to your flying and or lifelink creatures, which makes the creatures with flying and lifelink better the more you're making mercenaries. If you have at knife point, which gives your guys first strike on your turn, it's very easy to use mercenaries to make like a single blocker that your attacker that your opponent doesn't really want to block. Blue common that gets +1/+1 and unblockable when you cast your second spell each turn isn't a card I've played a lot, but is another kind of good source of inevitability and persistent damage. So it makes it very convenient to just like not really worry about how you're killing your opponent. You're killing your opponent by just kind of playing your game until your opponent's not there anymore. There are times like it makes it, like as far as like what is the strategy of this deck and like is it a tempo deck or an attrition deck, is it playing a fast game or a slow game, is it racing or is it like a board control deck, all of those feel kind of murky to me. Like because of all the incidental damage you're doing, if your opponent stumbles or if you have like a start with some creatures backed by some removal spells, sometimes you do kill your opponent very quickly, but that doesn't feel essential, and I feel like for the most part, I'm trying to make the game go longer and assuming long game favors me. But, like, is it a big game or a small game? Well, I'm making a bunch of tokens, and I'm pretty happy to have stuff like Take the Fall, where I'm just kind of, like, preventing some damage or keeping my creatures around. And I have a lot of games where, because of like at knife point and Brimstone Roundup and other things that make these mercenaries, like I'm pretty wide and my opponent will play some like big green creature, especially the 6/5 reach that draws a card when it's targeted, which I don't really want to target with a removal spell. And so my plan is to just kind of block it indefinitely. So this kind of freely chump blocking space has certainly some big game elements to it. And the like way that you're playing these like engines that just kind of give you more material leads to kind of a big game feel. I play a lot of games where I have a lot more cards in my hand than my opponent, specifically when like Intimidation Campaign is going. And in that kind of space, I'm definitely very strongly just trying to prolong the game. The way that it plays is mostly just like traditional control deck stuff, but it certainly feels a bit unusual because of the token aspect to it and the life drain aspect to it. I also like, there's a lot of kind of careful managing your life total and letting yourself take some hits that put you in kind of a dangerous range, knowing that you can gain back the life, because there is so much life gain in the space, specifically in black. Blue red's not going to be gaining you life, but black is giving you that. It helps a lot. I think that mostly covers it. Stuff that I've mentioned in previous podcasts about like life total feeling important and life gain being better than it usually is definitely applies. All of the like anything lets me gain life, anything that says gain a life or any creature with lifelink has been better here than in other formats for me. So yeah, hopefully that gives you some idea of what to look for with these colors. I think kind of the main thing that I would stress is when it comes to commons, you really want to be looking for enablers rather than standalone cards. Like specifically, you want your commons to just kind of be removal spells or like desert. Like you want commons to just like do nuts and bolts stuff. You want commons to draw cards, trigger crimes, and kill things. And as far as like creatures, you mostly want those to be like uncommons and rares. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to chat for questions. As always, thank you to the newest patron at patreon.com/draftingarchetypes. So Kyle, thank you very much. If anyone else is interested in checking out the Patreon and supporting the podcast, again, that's patreon.com/draftingarchetypes. So what questions do you have for me? As far as gameplay for this archetype, can you say that one rule of thumb is when in doubt, don't attack? I would certainly err toward not attacking, but I think it depends on how susceptible to doubt you are, because there are definitely spots where attacking is very profitable, where you're like ahead on a race, or you know, you have like mercenaries that you don't need to block with, and you can use them to like send one creature in a way that's very profitable. So I would say, like, all else equal, don't trade life. Like, don't make an attack that lets your opponent get an attack in unnecessarily, unless you're very far ahead in the race or the end is in sight. But also, don't forget to look for free or profitable attacks, specifically those that you can enable by using your mercenaries. But also, you might want to be careful to leave, you know, an untipped mercenary for chump blocking purposes, especially like if your opponent has one big creature and you have one big creature, you want to think about like, well, if my opponent kills my big creature, you know, is it going to be okay to take the big hit from theirs? Or do I want to have like an untapped mercenary to chump block with? So for the most part, be cautious about your attacks, but also do pay attention to finding windows where you can get them for free, because the fact that you're draining your opponent so much means that other points you can get in are kind of more valuable. And while you can win most of your games through raw attrition, the extra games that you can pick up by, you know, burning your opponent out early or, you know, finding lethal are definitely going to add percentage points. For the removal, since so many of the pieces involved can create lots of roadblocks for smaller opposing creatures, should I be prioritizing removal that can kill larger creatures, or should I try to make the deck as consistent as possible at doing the thing so I can get under threats I can't deal with? Cheap removal to double more often. So the question is basically, how do you prioritize expensive removal versus cheap removal? And if you are good at making mercenaries, I have mostly found that most large creatures don't need to be killed and can be chump blocked. And then you need some removal for like the 4-2 that gives their stuff trample. But like basically any removal spell is going to kill that. You want to be able to like answer flyers. And of course, you know, it's always good to have a mix of removal. There are some like giant bombs that you want large removal spells to kill. But I do think, you know, as far as like which way should you err, I would generally err toward cheaper removal as a high priority and look to set up spots where I can, you know, use Take the Fall to race or profitably trade with large creatures. Also, as I mentioned earlier, like Metamorphic Blast is a great way to deal with larger creatures. I don't know. I like cheap removal like deserts do a lot, but I also like Consuming Ashes and Unfortunate Accident, which are both certainly on the expensive side. So I guess my answer is actively try to have a mix. What kind of fixing package are you looking for in this archetype? Arid Archway isn't really fixing, right? Because that's a land that taps for two colorless. But Conduit Pylons, which is the Surveil Desert that filters mana, is great. as mentioned, the two color deserts that are in your colors that deal one are fantastic. And yes, the crime rock, the uncommon manalith that gets counters when you commit a crime, and you can spend two and tap it to remove a counter to draw a card, or to remove two counters to draw a card, is also a very good way to round it out. Outside of that, highway robbery is good fixing. Any sort of card draw will, like, you know, eventually make your mana work. So the deck can kind of get by on slightly worse mana than it might look. Curious about Arid Archway because it strains your mana base in exchange for card advantage. Not sure that's worth it with three colors. It's a question of how many other deserts you have. Like, if your mana is good enough, it's really nice to, like, get to pick up another desert for another crime trigger. And you do want to make all your land drops, and you can often find ways to spend the colorless going long, but I would only play Arid Archway if I already have a good amount of other fixing, if I'm three colors. At this point in the format, is this the type of archetype you feel like you can go into a draft expecting to draft? How much are you waiting to be pulled into Grixis versus being proactive about it as of today? So, I'm recording this podcast in the middle of a draft where I tried, where I didn't try to force Grixis before the podcast, which I sometimes do because I already felt pretty comfortable with it, and I'd already drafted some decks that I thought were good examples of it yesterday. And so I took an early, the green 1/2 that searches for a desert and gets bigger for your deserts. And then green ended up being cut and I fell back into Grixis, and now I have a Grixis deck. It's interesting to me to note that the 17 lands data suggests that these colors are overdrafted because the cards that I want have felt very open to me, and I have felt like I can mostly plan to be some kind of, like, blue-black control deck, or black, like, black-based or blue-based control as just kind of a, this is what I'm looking to do, but I'm pretty flexible about which colors I pair it with, and not very interested in green has felt very easy to me, and getting into green has felt hard to me, even though I know that green has been the most successful color. I kind of expect that in the coming days, green is going to be even more contested now that early data shows that it's, like, the best. And so I'm kind of expecting that early shifts in the format should make a thing that has felt very easy for me even easier. If other people start valuing, you know, Take the Falls and these uncommon enablers, or the uncommon kind of, like, engine cards, the uncommon enchantments, then I might find myself having a more natural opportunity to explore different archetypes. But for the moment, it's felt like a safe default for me. How do you decide on whether to run counter spells in this space? Cards that can't trigger crime slash double spells unless the opponent does something make them a little awkward. Yeah, so I think, like, counter spells are a lot better in Esper control than in Grixis control because they work with the don't play stuff on your turn thing that the white cards want, and they don't work with the play two spells thing that the red cards want, which is why I didn't mention the spree make a flyer counter a spell blue common as a card I'm looking for in Grixis. I think it's, like, okay to have some counter spells, but they're certainly not a high priority for me in Grixis, but I do like them a lot in Esper, which is a very similar deck. Of the three colors, have I found that one of them is most often or successfully a base color? I have often ended up starting my drafts in black. I think that it's easy to, like, I like the black mercenary style uncommons, and I like the black removal, and I like taking those cards early. Whereas more of the blue stuff that I want is stuff that, like, goes a little bit later. The blue and red both. Yeah, I think that, like, I'm looking for more contested black cards, and I've liked the black cards, so I have typically started black and then added to it unless I get a higher rarity, like, blue-red card. Certainly, you know, a higher rarity card changes everything. Black has generally been my like base that I'm pivoting off of in drafting in this space. I don't remember to mention like the blue red two spell stuff. I'm not really looking to go deep on that to make the commons work. Like, I don't want to work hard to enable a loan shark. I need cards like Crom and Malcolm and other like uncommons and rares that pay for doing two spell a turn for me to want to like prioritize plot cards and stuff like that. Iron Fist Pulverizer, I feel like I can pretty incidentally enable just with my like the cheap cards and card draw that I want to play anyway. But as far as having a kind of deck that can take advantage of like the Wolverine and the Loan Shark and stuff like that, that's going to follow from like uncommon and rare blue and red cards. In the previous episode, I said this is mostly a two-color format. Do I still think that's the case for other colors? Not only do I still think it's the case for other colors, I still kind of think that it's the space for like the Grixis colors. Of course, it is still and always the case that I think that the more like the more aggressive you are, the more you want to be two colors. The less aggressive you are, the more you are open to more colors. This deck plans to see a lot of cards and wants to prioritize deserts anyway, so it can get afford like looser mana. So it's very easy for it to splash. But I'm also pretty happy to be any two of Grixis rather than all of Grixis. And the reason that I started by talking about Grixis specifically isn't so much that I think that you should be aiming to be these three colors together instead of any two of them. It's more that I think that for an episode that I'm doing before there's like reliable 17 lands data, I wanted to start with an archetype that wouldn't be benefited by being able to reference 17 lands data. So I think that looking at any of the two-color archetypes, in a few days when we have better data on 17 lands, that will tell you a lot about which commons are most successful in that color pair. And then when I do talk about those color pairs, it'll be more like useful to at least engage with those stats and talk about which cards I think might be underperforming on those stats and why. Whereas three-color archetypes are much harder to investigate on 17 lands, and so there's less value lost by talking about them in the first episode. So there's not much space for generic top-end commons like the Djinn or 5/4 Ogre in a deck like this. Correct. Yeah, you really don't want like random expensive bodies that don't contribute to any synergies. Like, I think Iron Fist Pulverizer is very unique in terms of like common expensive creatures. I think it's much better than the other ones. If you can't get a Pulverizer and you feel like you need a finisher, I could see playing the 5/4 that becomes indestructible. But the Djinn, I think, is really bad. I really want cheap cards and a lot of card flow in the deck. And my expensive cards, I want, you know, the power level that you can get from uncommons and rares, not what you're offered at common. Notably, like, I didn't even mention the 3/5 Ward 2 Flying Vigilance Surveil 2 when you commit a crime Sphinx as a high priority in this archetype. I think it's fine, but I think it's, you know, about as good as a Pulverizer, maybe less good. And it's an uncommon, and it's not a card that I'm like interested in fighting for. So, those kind of just like mostly numbers commons that cost three or more mana are the exact cards you want to like most avoid in this archetype. All right. I think that's going to wrap us up. So thanks as always, everyone, for listening, and especially, chat for the questions. And I will be back next week with another archetype with a little bit more information from the 17 lands data, probably. So have a good week, and bye for now.
Prepare for light speed.